Now, as we continue in this series on the mighty acts and miracles of God, I want to pick up on just a couple of areas regarding Abraham that I didn't cover last time before we move on over into Isaac and Jacob. Let's go to Genesis, the 16th chapter, and I'm calling this to your attention because of what will be coming immediately afterwards, because immediately after this incident here, I'm going to refer to another one of the miracles of God in his contact with men. You may remember now that Abraham was given his call at 75 years of age. And we come here to Genesis, the 16th chapter, and we're looking at about 10 years after entering Canaan. So we're looking at Abraham now. He's Abram, as he was still called here, at 85 years of age. This would put Sarai at 75 years of age. Now, we don't know how the comparison of years in life would compare to our time today, because we have 70, and I believe Sarah lived to about age 120-something. It gives her age here. I forget just exactly what it was. Abraham even older, but at this point in life, I can say this, it probably was becoming very apparent to her that her biological clock was wearing out. They'd waited 10 years from the promises and nothing had happened. So we read that Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, Hagar. Now she reasoned, I'm quite sure, because she probably thought, it's too late for me to have any children now. I pray thee, go into my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. So in their human reasoning, they probably thought, well, I guess this is what God intends for us to do. We'll have a child by proxy. And so he went into Hagar, as we read, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. In other words, it went to her head. She immediately had disrespect and contempt for Sarai because she wasn't able to bear. And of course, Sarai and Abraham realized the mistake had been made. But Abram said to Sarai in verse 6 here, behold, thy maid is in thine hand, do to her as it pleases you. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness. This expression, angel of the Lord, in many cases refers specifically to the Lord, or what we would call Yahweh, the ancient tetragrammaton. So this is nothing more than another way of saying the Lord or Yahweh. Found her by the fountain of the water in the wilderness. And verse 9, the angel of the Lord said, return to thy mistress and submit thyself unto her. And the angel of the Lord said to her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said to her, verse 11, behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. Ishmael meaning God shall hear. So here was a direct intervention on God's part, a manifestation, as the reference books will say, a theophany, a manifestation, directly to Hagar to tell her to return. Why? Because this was Abraham's child. And even though Abraham and Sarah had made a bad decision here, and even though it certainly was not what God intended or planned, I'm sure God looked at them and said, yes, I know. I promised them this child, and they got impatient, and they took matters in their own hands. So God was certainly understanding, and so he told her to go back and submit. Now we can go to the 21st chapter. And we'll see now about 17 years later is when this incident is taking place. So Ishmael was a young lad now, 17 years of age. Sarah conceived, we read here, had a son. This was when Abraham was 100 years old and she was 90. So even a considerable period of time after the time of the birth of Ishmael, she still went without bearing children. And then she had this son, Isaac. And it came time to wean him. We read here, verse 8, the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. We don't know how old he was. He might have been 2-3 years of age. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne to Abraham, mocking. Now, it tells you there was something competitive going on in that family, doesn't it? No doubt, as a result of the mother's urging all those years, probably telling the son that he was Abraham's heir, and God would probably bless him. And so there was a competition going on to the point where, what did it lead to? He was mocking him. Now, that did not lead to a blissful and a joyous household. Whereby she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. Now, did God disagree with her? No, he didn't. He did not. In fact, he backed her up in it. Why? Because he could see very clearly that this was going to lead to further problems, probably very serious problems, if these two households continued this way and if Ishmael continued in that household with Isaac, much, much younger. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. You see, the sorrows that people bring on themselves when they use human reasoning and try to solve problems their own way. How painful it must have been for Abraham to have to see this happen. And God said to Abraham, let it not be grievous in your sight because of the lad and because of the bondwoman. In all that Sarah has said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. God had already determined it would not be Ishmael. Well, the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. So God had concern for Ishmael because of Abraham. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered into the wilderness of Beersheba, probably working her way back south toward Egypt. And the water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. She didn't just throw him down. Word is often used to mean laying down. And she went and sat her down over against a good way off, as it were a bow shot, and she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. She was in a very bad situation here. Probably would have perished and died of thirst had not God intervened. So again, what did God do? And God heard the voice of the lad. The lad was probably crying too. And the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him in your hand, for I will make him a great nation. You talk about assurance. You talk about instilling confidence. You talk about buoying someone up in their darkest hour. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the bottle with water and gave to the lad to drink. So God delivered her. Now, we don't know exactly where he dwelt. He says he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. That seems to have been an area south and east of where Abraham was. But what do we read here? God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelled in the wilderness and became an archer. So here was another one of God's miracles, his acts in intervening and preserving Abraham's posterity even through this Egyptian woman, because of his concern for Abraham. Now, those are the last two that I want to cover concerning Abraham. Now, if you'll recall, the last time I spoke on this subject, we saw that Abraham had made arrangements for a wife to be taken for Isaac from his own family and his own kindred. So let's go to Genesis, the 25th chapter. And we read in verse 20, Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife. Now, we'd think 40 years old, that's pretty old in our time to get married, but back in that day, you know, they lived a considerable period of time, so that probably was just the equivalent of about 20 years, or, you know, fairly young for us. He took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Syrian. So he married his cousin, in fact, is what he did. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. Now, how long was she barren? Well, let's go over here to verse 26 and we'll see. He married her when he was 40. And we read here, after that, out came his brother out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob, and Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. 20 years they waited to have a child. So it was a long time, wasn't it? So you see, as we read back here, verse 21, Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. So he no doubt really prayed and asked God for his intervention. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. So here was an intervention, a miracle in behalf of God in order to bring forth these children at an age quite a bit younger than what Abraham did, but still that problem seemed to persist in the family where the women in that family had difficulty conceiving, at least some of them. She conceived, and what happened? And the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it be so, why am I thus? In other words, if I'm pregnant and I'm to give forth these children, why am I in such straits? And the two of them were probably, as we see the history of it later out, slugging it out in the womb. Never could get along, could they? And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb. So it wasn't a matter where she just had a child, she had twins. And two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. Now, I didn't mean in that particular lifetime, because that didn't happen then. But it certainly happened to the descendants. And the struggle is still going on today, isn't it? Although I would say this, there have been guesses made as to where the descendants of Esau went. They're known in the Bible as Edomites, and there were portions of them that were absorbed into the Jews and became a part of what we call Jewry today. It is also believed that a large segment of those who make up the Turks are Edomites, and there's quite a bit of evidence that the ancient Spartans, that very powerful military city-state in Greece, were made up of Edomites. So they may be scattered somewhat too, but there was bad blood between those two families for a long time. And then as we read here, the first came out red all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau, meaning hairy or rough. And after that his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob, which means heel grabber or supplanter. Now, there's a lot of history to those two later on. We won't cover that, but what I just simply wanted to cover in this particular chapter here is how God intervened mightily in behalf of Rebekah so that she could bear these children and God's promises could be continued. Now, we know that God appeared to Abraham on a number of occasions. He actually saw him and talked with him. Well, we're going to see here now that God also revealed himself to Isaac. So let's notice here now, in Genesis 26, we read here in verse number 1, there was a famine in the land. So they seem to have gone through cyclical patterns of dry weather. Besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar. Now it's an interesting thing as to when the Philistines actually came into the land. We don't really know historically. Historians place it about 1200 B.C., and that might be the case. We don't really know, but we do know that they did come from Greece via the island of Crete. Some people think that they were Egyptians, a colony of Egyptians, because they had to settle there for some time, but it seemed to have been what we would call Caucasian stock today. That wouldn't exactly apply because there weren't Caucasians in that time, but to be the same type of people. and they were very industrious. They were a very competent people. They were also very warlike. They vanished from the scene somewhere around the time of Alexander the Great, so no one knows ever what happened to them. Anyway, he went to Abimelech, which is a title, the king of the Philistines. What happens here? And the Lord appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt. So what God was doing here, he was giving Isaac the assurance that he needed, that he would back him up and those promises would be fulfilled in the face of adversity, because here was a very serious, trying condition, and he had to rely on the king of the Philistines for support. He had to go to an area where he could secure the sufficient pasture land and everything he needed. Go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell of thee. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee and will bless thee, for unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father, and will make thy seed as to multiply as the stars of heaven, and I will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. You know, it's a funny thing when you read about these people, they talk about Abraham's faith and salvation by faith. It never dawns on them that Abraham kept God's commandments, kept his charge, his statutes, and his laws. Somehow they seem to think, well, he just believed God and that gave him all these promises, and you gain salvation by just believing in God. And that's the way a lot of people, they walk around kind of a daze, you know, and they think, I just got to believe on God, but what does he want me to do? Well, just believe. You know, they don't read their Bibles very carefully, do they? Just because you don't find all those laws listed in the days of Abraham doesn't mean he was not keeping the laws that you find listed later on in the nation of Israel. The same God, the same laws. But anyway, he appeared to Isaac and gave him a big boost and an assurance that despite what the present conditions would be like, that he would deliver him, he would protect him, and he would fulfill all those promises, the promises of what we call a race as well as grace. Now, there's another example here. Notice verse 12, Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. Now, he had trouble with the Philistines because they began to get envious. They didn't like to see such a man of such wealth and power around him. He had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and great stores of servants, and the Philistines envied him. For the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth. Now, what about that? Were they doing something they shouldn't have done? Oh, yes, indeed. Let's go back to the 21st chapter here and notice verse number 30. You see, Abraham made a contract or a covenant with the Philistines. And we read here, verse 32, thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech rose up and Phicol, the chief captain of his host, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. But if you'll notice, the agreement was, verse 23, now therefore swear unto me here by God that thou wilt not deal falsely with me, nor with my son, nor my son's son, but according to the kindness that I've done unto thee, thou shalt do unto me and unto the land when thou hast sojourned. And Abraham said, I swear. So what they did, they actually made an agreement here, because they saw that God was with Abraham and would bless him and his descendants. And yet, they already stopped at the wells. They broke their contract, they broke their covenant, broke their agreement. Isn't that the way people are? Especially when it comes to money. So we read here, Abimelech said, go from us, for thou art mightier than we. This is back in the 26th chapter in verse number 16. And Isaac departed thence and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar, dwelt there. Isaac digged again the wells of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham. And he called their names after the names by which his father had called them. And Abraham's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of water. And the herdsmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, the water is ours. So what's it all about? What it is, it's a squabble over water rights. You know, if you're familiar with the American West, you know, there were big fights, I mean big feuds, that existed between cattle barons over water rights. Men were killed over water rights. So that isn't anything new. Well, I won't read the whole story here, but he just moved to another spot and dug another well, and they agitated him there. Then he moved to another spot and dug another well. And so we read here, he called the name of it Rehoboth, meaning room, as you see here in verse 22. And he said, for now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. And he went up from thence to Beersheba. And the Lord appeared to him the same night. Now God is giving him further assurance and helping him again. I am the God of Abraham thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee, and I will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. So when he needed the assurance and the help that God was with him and would back him up and fulfill his promises, he got it. So you see, God not only worked with Abraham, but he continued to work right on with Isaac, his son. And so he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants digged the well. And so you see here, they make agreement with Isaac now. Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Huzahith, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. And Isaac said, why are you coming? And then they said here, notice verse 28, let there now be an oath betwixt and between us and thee, and let us make a covenant that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, and as we have done thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace. Now thou art blessed to the Lord. So they made a covenant for what it was worth. Anyway, it certainly gave assurance to Isaac that God would bless him and help him. Just one other little side issue here that isn't directly related to the matter of miracles, but notice here, verse number 34 shows you how important marriages are. Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. So you see, he didn't marry his own family. He married into these people that were there in that land, and what's the conclusion of it? Which were a grief of mind to Isaac and to Rebekah. Well, you find later on, he tried to make up for it. He married a daughter of Ishmael. And that didn't satisfy things either. Now, that's Isaac. Now, let's go to Jacob. I won't rehearse the whole story here to you. You're aware of it. That the mother, Rebekah, favored Jacob. Isaac favored Esau. And whenever you have a situation like that, it is not the best. Sometimes parents commit that mistake. They'll have a favorite. And that's really not good. It isn't good for the child, and it isn't good for the others. But in this particular case here, what it led to was an act, a connived act by Rebekah and Jacob to secure the blessing. Actually, the birthright Esau sold for a morsel of pottage. You remember that? He didn't appreciate it, and he didn't put any value on it. He did not really recognize the great value. In other words, he was a man that had no spiritual inclinations at all. And so he didn't value that great birthright, and he sold it for a bowl of pottage. Then Rebekah connived in order to secure the blessing also. Which, you remember the story, he had him dress up and wear the garments that Esau wore and tie goat skins around his arms, so when his father felt him, he would feel hairy like Esau, and then he secured the blessing. And then when Esau came back in and found he wasn't going to receive it, it had already been taken from him through subterfuge, and it was almost like the law of the Medes and the Persians, it couldn't be revoked. And so we read here in Genesis 27, verse 41, and Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. Yeah, he wanted that physical blessing, all right. He didn't appreciate the birthright because that was something that would have gone down the line to his descendants. But he wanted the blessing because that was a physical thing right here and now that he'd received in this light. and as well as for his descendants. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning of my father are at hand, then I will slay my brother Jacob." Pretty murderous attitude, wasn't it? Well, Rebekah saw the only thing to do then was for Jacob to flee. So we read here, Isaac called Jacob, and Isaac agreed with it, as we read here in chapter 28, verse 1, and charged him and said unto him, "You shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan." So here was Abraham that sent back to his homeland and had his son Isaac marry a cousin. Now we're going to see that Isaac instructs his son Jacob to do the same thing. Esau had already proven his unworthiness, his inability to comprehend and to appreciate the spiritual things. And so there was no need to even fool with him. So Jacob was going to send his son now to marry another one of his own cousins. It ended up, though, he didn't get one, he got two. "Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, thy mother's brother, and take thee a wife thence from the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother." Marry your cousin. So he left. Now, I won't go through all the details here, but now we're going to see God also now begins to manifest his mighty acts and miracles here in the life of Jacob. Jacob went out from Beersheba, as we read in verse number 10 here, and went toward Haran, and he lighted upon a certain place, and he tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows to lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed. And behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending. Now that has some significance for two reasons. Number one, we might go to Hebrews, the first chapter. And here's what it says about angels. Verse 14, "Are they not ministering spirits set forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation?" So God sends them. So he saw these angels ascending and descending on this ladder from heaven. Also, we might notice an interesting statement here in John chapter 1 and verse number 51. John 1:51. Jesus said, "Verily I say to you, hereafter you shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." So he was seeing, really in a vision, a reality. Contrary to what some people might want to tell us today, that all these things are metaphors and they're just methods of God's condensation. And really, God doesn't have any place. He's a state, and he doesn't have any shape. He's there. He's found everywhere. This is what we're being told today. I might add, by people who ought to know better. Anyway, he saw the ladder set up on the earth, back in Genesis 28 here, verse 12. The top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it, and behold, the Lord stood above it and said, "I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land wherein thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land." So he was going to be a stranger in a different land for a while. Notice Genesis 35, verse number 27. "Jacob came unto Isaac his father, unto Mamre, unto the city of Arba, which is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned." So what this is telling us here, back in the 35th chapter, verse 27, Jacob returned and came home and saw his father Isaac. Some about 20 years later, whatever the length was, I think it was 20 years. So here was God's promise that he would fulfill it. And we see here in Genesis 35, verse number 6, so Jacob, you see this is after they left and returned home, returned back to the land of Canaan. Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, that is Bethel, he and all the people that were with him. So God did keep his promise and return him, didn't he? And Jacob awakened out of his sleep, as we read in Genesis 28, verse 16, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. There may have been some city there. It doesn't appear as though he was in the city. It appears as though he was on the outskirts. Maybe he didn't make it there to the city, but he certainly recognized this was a place where God was, and he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he'd put up for his pillows and set it up for a pillar and poured oil upon the top of it to consecrate it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. That is the house of God. But the name of that city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God, and this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. Yeah, there's tithing. Clear back in the patriarchal period, they understood that. They knew you received blessings for tithing, and curses if you don't. So we see God revealed himself to Jacob in a very similar manner by which he had done to Isaac and to Abraham. Now let's go to Genesis 29th chapter. We read here that Laban, in verse 16, he had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, whatever that means. You can read the commentators, and they'll have different ideas as to what it means. Some think that it means she had very striking and pretty eyes. Some think she had weak eyes. Whatever the case was, she had tender eyes. And Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Now, we know the story. By the conniving of Laban, he ended up, through subterfuge, marrying the older one. And then he decided he would work another 7 years for the younger one, which he did. And so he actually had two wives, two sisters. And I tell you, you couldn't think of a worse situation. I mean, you see it in the whole relationship later on. I mean, the competition between those two sisters was fierce. But notice what it says here. He went in also unto Rachel. This is after he took her too, see, in verse 30. And he loved also Rachel more than Leah. Now, we have to come to an understanding here. We want to be straight on this. It didn't mean that he hated Leah, because as it says in a later verse here, that when the Lord saw that she was hated, that particular word there means in this context to love less by comparison. In other words, he really loved Rachel, but he didn't hate Leah. I mean, after all, how many children did he father by her? If he hated her that bad, he wouldn't have fathered all those children by her. It's just that he much, much more preferred Rachel. And that's just the way it happens to be in this physical life, you know. We're physical, flesh, and human beings, you know. And the old saying is certainly true. One man's beauty is another man's eyesore. So it's just the way it works. So he served with him yet 7 years. And verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, in other words, loved less by comparison because he loved the other one so much, he opened her womb. But Rachel was barren. So see, there seemed to be this proclivity in his whole family as you go down the line here. None of these women, it seems like, but certain one of them were just unable to conceive. And Leah conceived. And if my memory serves me correct, out of all the sons of Jacob, 6 of them were hers. And there were others from the 2 other handmaids, plus 2 from Rachel. So what did God do? In order to alleviate the situation, to make it more tenable, and to make it livable, he began opening her womb so she could have children. And that certainly would have had an effect on Jacob. But you can be sure it had an effect on Rachel, too. And the competition occurred here. And I remember the giving of the handmaids and the securing of the mandrakes and the competition and the bad feelings that existed there. It was not a good situation. But in spite of that, notice Genesis chapter 30 and verse number 22. And God remembered Rachel. And God hearkened unto her and opened her womb. Now, she must have been praying awful hard and asking God for help, because if you notice back over here in the chapter 30, verse 1, when Rachel saw she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in God's stead who has withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" What he's saying is, it is not my fault. And so she evidently must have really prayed and cried out to God, and so God remembered her. He answered her. And God hearkened unto her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bare a son, and said, "God hath taken away my reproach," and she called his name Joseph. You know the importance of Joseph later on. Remember what the Bible says? You see, Reuben, because he defiled his father's bed, was excluded from the promises, and he said, "Judah, I have given the scepter, and Joseph receives the birthright." So the great promises of great national wealth and prosperity went to the descendants of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. So Joseph proved to be a very important addition to that family. Now, let's go back over to Genesis, the 31st chapter. We're going to see some more direct intervention here now on behalf of God in his dealing with Jacob. We'll remember the story. Laban had changed his wages 10 times, had done everything in his power to deprive him of his rightful gain. And so we read here, God really began to bless him because of that. And in the last verse in chapter 30, the man increased exceedingly. So Jacob really began to prosper here. And in chapter 31, and he heard the words of Laban's sons. See, they were envious. I can tell you, if there's any one motivating factor, one motivating urge in the life of Laban, it was one thing, and that is covetousness. This fellow was so covetous, his whole life was just built around him, as well as his sons. Saying, "Jacob had taken away all that was our father's, and of that which is our father's hath he has gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before." You know, the pot dried up. He wasn't reaping all the goods that he had been getting. Now he began to get sour over it. Notice what happened. "And the Lord said to Jacob, Return unto thy land, unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee." So he sent for his two wives, because evidently he was out in the field at the time. The angel of God spake unto me in a dream, verse 11, saying, "Jacob," and I said, "Here am I." And he said, "Lift up now your eyes and see all the rams which leap upon the flocks, or ring stakes speckled and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowedest to vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return to the land of thy kindred." So God, by direct revelation, told him to leave. Well, then we know the story. He left, didn't he? We read in verse 18, he carried away all his cattle and all his goods. Well, then Laban found out. Well, Laban's countenance toward him was not good. So notice what happened. Laban no doubt had some ill will in mind when he was going to go down there. He was going to catch up with him. Took him a few days, I think 3 days or no, 7 days. He took his brethren. You see, as we read in verse 22, it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled, and he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. He was up to no good. What happened? God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that you speak not to Jacob either good or bad. You'd better be neutral. So you read a little bit later on when Laban was talking to Jacob, this is what he said. Verse 29, it is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take heed that you speak not to Jacob either good or bad. So that alleviated a serious situation there, and he was allowed to continue. Now, he's on his way, and he's beginning to approach the promised land, and he has to deal with his brother Esau now. He was afraid of Esau. Esau had grown into quite a captain and chieftain in his own right and had plenty of servants and warriors with him. He was a very proficient leader and a military man. So we read here, verse 32, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him, giving him further assurance. Did we not just read that angels are ministering spirits sent forth to those who are heirs of salvation? So here was a series of angels that met him. In fact, there's a statement over here in Psalm 91 we might want to look at here. Psalm 91 and verse 11. For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. So he met angels. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's host. In other words, this is God's army. How many angels did he see? He must have seen a considerable number to say this is God's host. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. That is two hosts or camps. In other words, his camp and God's camp. Now he's very concerned about his brother. And if you notice verse 11, he prays, deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. For I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And then he reminds God of his promise. Thou saidest, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Then he sent his family. They came to the brook Jabbok, the river, and he sent his family over. And then we go to verse number 24 here, and we notice Jacob was left alone. So he was no doubt praying and imploring God for deliverance and help. And what happens here? There wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. Strange circumstance, isn't it? I don't know if anyone has a complete answer as to what was taking place here. I think I can say that it certainly involved a spiritual transformation that took place in his life, probably by means of the physical exertion that he had to do. But you see, it says a man wrestled with him, and yet it says here in verses 28 and 30 that this was God. So what God did, he appeared in the form of a man. You see, notice verse 28, he said, thy name shall no more be called Jacob. You're not a supplanter anymore, but Israel. That is a prince of God. For as a prince have you power with God and with men and have prevailed. And verse 30, Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face and my life is preserved. I don't know why God was doing this unless he was just testing him to see whether or not he was really determined to believe his promises. Because remember, he gave him the promise and said he would do it. And he may have been putting him through some test. But there's an interesting statement over here in Hosea, the 12th chapter, that I think throws some light on it. Hosea chapter 12. And you read here, beginning in verse number 3, he took his brother by the heel in the womb, and by his strength he had power with God. Or he was a prince, or behaved himself princely with God. Yea, he had power over the angel. So God is called the angel here. The word angel just simply means messenger. He had power with the angel and prevailed. Notice the next part. He wept and made supplication unto him. He found him in Bethel, and there he spake with us, even the Lord God of hosts. So there was a great experience taking place here, and it was so profound in Jacob's life that as a result of this encounter with God, putting him to the test in this manner, he prevailed, and as it says, his name was now changed Israel. You see, Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, now, I think we all recognize very easily that God could have slain him instantly if he would have chosen to do so. He didn't choose to do so. He manifested him in such a way that he attested the epitome of Jacob's abilities and strengths. And when he saw then that in by that method that Jacob was prevailing, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." That is this manifestation of God. "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go except thou bless me." So Jacob really knew that his reliance was really upon God entirely, and he had to have this reassurance. And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." And Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." And he said, "Wherefore is it that thou dost ask me my name?" He didn't tell him. And he blessed him there. So it was a great spiritual experience that he had gone through here. And Jacob called the name of that place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. So this is another example of God's intervention. And then he went ahead, went right on ahead into the land and met Esau. And Esau accepted all of his gifts and everything went fine. And he returned to his father's house. Now I just have one more incident that I want to cover here regarding Jacob. And then we'll be going on into other examples in the Old Testament after this. But let's notice this one here. I won't read the whole story here. I'll just hit the high spots because time is running out. In chapter 34. And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Which, you see, was not a wise thing to do. Mix with those peoples. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. That's where he forced her. And what was the result? And the sons of Jacob, verse 7, came out of the field, and when they heard it, the men were grieved, and they were very wroth. I should say so. Well, I think you all know the rest of the story. They surreptitiously entered into an agreement with all the citizens of that city-state, and they agreed that they would join them and be a part of them, they'd be circumcised. So all the males circumcised themselves. And then on the third day, notice it as we read in verse 25, it came to pass on the third day when they were sore. They say that circumcision for an adult is one of the most painful and excruciating experiences that one can go through. And they were sore. It means that they were bedridden. That two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor the Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. And the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. Well, of course, there were a lot of innocent people killed in that too. You recall later on when Israel passed the blessings on to his 12 sons on his deathbed. What did he say of Simeon and Levi? Brothers of blood. He gave them no inheritance, and he said they would be scattered in Israel. So they were not allowed to become independent tribes of their own. They were just scattered among the others because they were too bloodthirsty. Now, what happened? Naturally, it was a very serious situation. Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, verse 30, you have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And they said, what was their answer? Should he deal with our sisters with a harlot? Now, what happened? God said to Jacob, God appeared now right at this time, right at this time when he needed this assurance. God said to Jacob, arise and go to Bethel and dwell there. Leave here and go back up to Bethel and dwell there. You'll be safe there. And make there an altar unto God that appeareth unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of thy brother Esau. And Jacob said to his household, put away all the strange gods that are among you. But now here's what I want to emphasize. He didn't have to worry. Verse 5, they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. That's right. God frightened them all to leave him alone. Didn't necessarily meant that God approved of what they did, but after all, he was still dealing with Jacob, or with Israel, and he was going to fulfill the promises that he had made to Abraham, and he protected him, even in the face of that very, very critical situation at that time. All right, next time then we'll be carrying on with some of the experiences of Joseph and some of the others.